Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century.
Join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together.
Tis the season to listen to podcasts. You found the Gravity Podcast.
Merry Christmas,
Tide, everybody. I'm glad we can finally say that again in our country.
2 weeks in a row, we're making bad Christmas.
Two weeks in a row, Christmas jokes.
This
is the second day you're listening to this on. Well, it comes out on the 26th of December, which would be the second day of Christmas. Also, sometimes called Boxing Day.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah,
if you're in England.
Yes.
For those who like spots of tea and crumpets.
That's great. I think you should totally. From now on, Christy has to speak in that accent. Mm-hmm. So I think I'd heard of Boxing Day, but didn't know what it was. So I did a quick Wikipedia search with my fingertips and found that it was originally a holiday to give gifts to poor people. Hmm. So basically, you would pack up boxes full of food and stuff and you would, you know, hand it to poor people. But now it's just a day that retailers have sales.
Yeah, it feels like that's a lot of the history of a lot of holidays.
Or if you're a parent, you say, look at all the stuff you got yesterday for Christmas. You tell your kids,
box go up
through
some of
your
stuff.
Stuff and yeah, box up your old toys you don't play with.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of the Christmas Black Friday, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah, especially in England. And there's tons of soccer games on Boxing Day. It's one of my favorite days of the year because, you know, usually I am not working. And there's soccer on, like, pretty much all day. And so I'll watch like three or so soccer games on Boxing Day.
Oh,
so I'm looking forward to that.
Wow.
All right. Okay. Well, whatever you're celebrating and however you're celebrating, we're glad that you're here with us. This is also, in this podcast, we're going to talk about sort of a year in review. We're going to share a little bit of what's been going on in our lives. And maybe just have some reflections on that. But first, as is our custom now, we are opening gifts from each other.
Yes.
Live. This is happening live. Now, we're recording this before Christmas at an indeterminate date. But we are doing this in your ears after Christmas. So I wonder if we should go back and forth, Christy. Like you open.
I think so. Yeah.
You open one gift and then we open a gift. Okay. Now, listener. Because this has been a very busy season, full of hustle and bustle, Christy sent me a care package with gifts for Ben and I. But one of the things about Ben's yearly updates, spoiler alert, is that he moved from my town to a land far, far away. And
I actually don't have your new address, which is why I'm just going to send it all to Matt.
He's not that far, actually. He's only about 30 minutes away, but I had it in my car to give to Ben, and one thing led to another, and I wasn't able to remember / give it to him. And so I will be opening our gifts on behalf of us, Ben. Mm-hmm. And at some
and
point,
showing them.
And I'll show you.
And substitute.
At some point, if you're a good little boy, I will make sure you get your gifts.
All right. All right.
All right.
He might not want some of them. Who knows?
Yeah.
Okay, go for it.
I'm going to go first, and I'm pulling out, cups. Oh, this is awesome. Christy got me Elf, like Will Ferrell's Elf cups.
And, oh, nice.
And it's him looking alarmed.
Son of a nutcracker.
And it says son of a nutcracker on it, which I do say that a lot.
I
love these, Christy. Yeah.
You and Sharon can just put your eggnog in there. I don't know.
This is great. It's called a party cup. And you know I'm going to party. Can I share a little anecdote?
Cup.
I was in eighth grade, and I was walking up the aisle to turn in a test, and I stubbed my toe. like really hard on a chair. And I doubled over on the floor. I've always been a little dramatic. I doubled over on the floor and everyone is quiet. And I went, son of a bitch. You thought I was going to say it, didn't you? Like that?
No.
And it got a great laugh. Everybody loved that joke. Even the teacher. She thought it was really funny too. But now I don't do that anymore.
Good memory.
I do son good of memories, a nutcracker.
Yeah. You don't do it on podcasts or anything.
No. I think about it, but then I don't do it. Christy, thank you for these party cups. These are wonderful.
Party cups.
Merry Christmas. Okay. I am going to open up one. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm. I am.
Oh boy. It's a box and it says Disney on it.
It does say Disney on it.
Which I'm exciting. Going to Disney. Oh, you guys, this is amazing. It is a bead bracelet, hot pink, like that matched my headphones. Mm-hmm. And it says, Christy.
Yep.
Did you make this?
My daughter Cece made it for you.
Look at that. I'm wearing it. I'm putting it on right now.
It's really
matches.
Sweet.
It looks very
it's
good.
It's got little hearts on it.
That's wonderful. All right. Number two. I'll let Cece know you liked it. Ooh, I got a little box with a bow on it.
Yes, you did.
Look at that. And inside there is...
I don't know if you'll know what it is.
A plastic bag. I'm opening the plastic bag. And inside the plastic bag, there is a pop socket? Nope. There is a We Wish You a Merry Christmas, the Tebbies. It's a little plastic see-through thing with a knob on it. Christy?
Let me help you out.
Is it a...
It's a cookie stamp. You like put a cookie dough underneath it and you stamp it. Doink. And then it says Merry Christmas from the Tebbies.
Oh, wow, it's like a Christmas, it's like a Tebby Christmas seal.
That is amazing.
Or Sternkey, either way.
Or Sternkey,
you know.
Oh, that's amazing.
So you can give Christmas cookies
stamp.
Yeah, to your neighbors and they'll know who they're from.
Wonderful. Thank you, Christy Finley.
That's incredible.
You are welcome. Okay, you guys, oh my goodness. You guys, I got new headphones.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. What color do you think they are?
You should open them up. We're going to have to
open it up. Yeah. Okay.
Dull gray.
Opening up the box. You guys. Okay. Listen, I have bright pink headphones. Uh-huh. This, however, is like pink mauve. Yeah. It's like farmhouse pink.
Oh, yeah. That's
which, you know, I'm a big farmhouse girl.
Very trendy color right now.
Oh, you guys, this is so good.
Well, you've been using your daughter's headphones.
I have been.
For years. And those are, they make use of a technology called Bluetooth. I can walk you through it.
I don't have to have a cord?
No cords.
Wow.
And they also, they come with a microphone too, Christy. So we'll maybe have to make sure that doesn't interfere with the mic you got plugged in. But anyway, yeah. I thought it's time time for an upgrade and Brie can have her headphones back.
I love it. And they're Barry. So they're so pretty. Is that the name Thank of the color? You.
Yep.
Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well,
they're very good looking.
All right. Gift number three. Oh my gosh. Christy got me Michigan football drink coasters.
Oh wow. That is top level trolling.
A troll gift. With the big house
Listen,
on them.
They're number one right now. Come on.
Okay, Christy.
Hail to the victors, Belgian. You just need to think of me every time.
You just wait. Wow. You just wait. You just wait.
Ben, since you're not opening up yours, you don't have coasters. You have another Michigan thing.
Oh,
another Can we
Michigan
tell you what
thing.
It is?
Sure.
Yes.
What is it?
Because like Matt sits around and watches football. I wasn't sure that you did that.
I don't.
So your drink didn't need to go on a coaster. But you do like to cook.
Oh.
And you cook a lot for your family, right?
Yeah, I'm the head chef in the Sternkey household.
So now you have Michigan salt and pepper shakers. You can think of me every time you just salt and pepper your food.
I will. I will think of you. It's not the same kind of troll as it is for Matt because I don't really follow college football
like you
all do. No. But I do understand. I do understand what it means, and I will think of you every time I put some salt on the food that I'm cooking. So
all right. Yeah. Okay, here we go. I'm opening up a box. Oh, look it. You guys gave nice gifts. I feel like I gave kind of mean gifts. Well, the cookie cutter, that's nice. It's a mug.
Yeah.
And it's Michigan, like the mitten, you know, with a little heart. And then it goes to Colorado with a little heart, like both my home places.
Oh, from Michigan to Colorado.
And Christy has a little coffee station in her kitchen with lots of different mugs, so... I got you that mug to put at your coffee station.
I love it. I will use it. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right. We're down to, we got a card here, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
This is a Christmas card from the Pinleys. Oh my gosh, what a great picture. This is a really sweet picture. Look at that.
I know. Oh, all my people.
All the people. That's so sweet, Christy. I love that. And I love on the back, you've got like little highlights from all the kids, like what they love.
Yep.
Right?
Oh, that's fun.
Which was kind of a funny thing because they were.
Okay, wait a second. Story is on here.
Yes. You guys know Story had like a stroke and nearly died.
She stroked out. And all the people on the back of the card, it's got like, you know, let's see here. It's got like Soren, who's 11th grade, loves cross country, Tennessee football, right? Or, you know, and then Story, it doesn't even have Story's name. It just has, quote, "I'm still alive."
We're just thankful. We're just thankful. She's alive.
What a blessing to be alive.
So good.
All right.
Okay, here's my card. My card is two little snowmen, and it says "Burr," and then he rubs his little hands together because they're sticks, and they catch on fire.
Oh!
And then it says, "I hope you're fired up for a great Christmas." You somehow figured out to do a dad joke through a card.
Well, I did look long and hard for that. All right, the final gift here is a plastic. Is this a cookie cutter?
It is.
And then I would stamp it with my cookie stamp.
Yep.
Okay, now I gotta make some cookies now. Wow. Some Christmas cookies. Thank you, Christy Finley.
Yeah. And amazing. Okay, here's final my gift. Last gift. Yep. Okay. It's in a plastic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy. It's a t-shirt. And it says oh my gosh. Okay. Ben, did you even see it?
I didn't see this one, though.
Okay, it's Coach Harbaugh, and it says free.
Anybody doesn't know, the coach of the Michigan Wolverines, Jim Harbaugh, has been suspended for more games than he's coached in this year. And it's a t-shirt that basically is seeking to free the prisoner.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
Will you wear that t-shirt?
I will wear it.
That is hilarious.
Listen. Yeah, I don't think he's coming back. That's just my opinion. But
he'll be there for the bowl game.
He will be there for the bowl game, and hopefully for the national championship, assuming they win the Rose Bowl.
Oh boy! Well,
so all right. Well, Merry Christmas, y'all.
That's always fun.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Always fun.
God bless us.
And how perfect that our gifts came to each other in boxes on Boxing Day.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's thematic.
Well, we want to just maybe round out this episode with. Just checking in on a year. It's been 2023 has been a year. And lots of things have happened. We already mentioned Ben moved houses this year. We mentioned Christy's dog had a stroke. Bless her heart. Yeah. Bless her brain, I guess you could say. But I don't know, other things going on. I think, Christy, you said you had a few things you wanted to share. So maybe you can let you go first.
Well, my personal thing, is that, you know, I'm in my D-min at Denver Seminary, and for your thesis, you write, you know, a dissertation basically of 5 chapters, and chapter 5 just got approved.
Oh, great.
I did my whole project on, does growing your emotional intelligence increase your perceived intimacy with God? So if you grow in your emotional intelligence, do you feel closer to God, basically?
Yeah.
I think it's true in human relationships, right? Like if you grow and understand emotions, I think it probably impacts your wives and your kids. Anyway, there's not a lot written about God. And so I did this whole project and there was, spoiler alert, there was an increase. Like the people in my class, there was 19 people. They grew by over 3 points of their emotional intelligence on a scale of 1 to 75. And they grew in their perceived intimacy with God. So there was a correlation, which... super cool, because I feel like a lot of people like are longing maybe to feel closer to God, and they think it's going to come through just like intelligence or more knowledge about the Bible. And I disagree with that. And so here is another tool, another thing that we can practice and be a part of that impacts our relationship with God.
That's really cool. Yeah, that's really great, Christy. I'm glad you're writing about that and doing that research. I think there's like an intuitive connection there, for, you know, for many of us, but it's interesting to sort of see that, okay, there's some research that bears this out.
Right.
That really you cannot, it's difficult to feel close to God, to know God, unless you know yourself, because
that's
kind of what God has access to, right? Our thoughts, our emotions, our bodies, like that's, where else would we encounter God? But
I don't know who said it. Tozer, maybe, like, God awareness starts with self awareness or something like that.
John Calvin says that, but he's mostly referring, when he says self awareness, he's mostly referring to how sinful we are. But still, we can rip that quote out of context and use it to support your thesis. Also, Teresa of Avila said that as well, who meant something different than John Calvin. And then Augustine said something very similar to that too. This is a fairly well established axiom in Christian tradition.
That's right. Yeah. So that's my personal update of Big 2023. And then I was just thinking, like, what scripture has marked this year for me? And it comes from Luke 15, the story of the prodigal son. You know how sometimes there's just a season where maybe you study something and it kind of just gets in your bones in a way that it wasn't there before.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people know the story of the prodigal son, but kid, you know, asks his dad for money and his inheritance. He gets it. He goes away. He goes to Vegas, spends it all. And eventually gets to the place where he's like, I want to go back. Like, I'm not even eating. I'm hungry. I don't, you know. And so he comes up with this whole speech that he wants to give his dad of, like, I'm not worthy to be your son. And can I just be your servant and your slave and I'll work? And he walks home. And there was a custom during the time of Jesus that I learned this year that if a child disgraced their parents, it was the job of the elders of the city, the men of the city, to kind of stand guard and make sure that that kid was never welcomed back in the city or the home of that parent. And so if they heard that a kid was coming back or a relative was coming back that had done that, they would stand at the gate and they would have a big pot and they would throw the pot at the kid's feet and it would smash into a million pieces. And they would say, this is what you did to your family. You are no longer welcome here. And I learned that, and you know, it says in scripture that the father saw the son from a far way off, and it's a parable. Jesus, you know, it's an earthly story, but not actual events. But I wonder if Jesus put that in there because I always interpreted him seeing his son from a far way off as he loved his kid and was longing for his kid to come home. And I think that that's true. I think it's depicting love and the father's love. But there's also this thought of maybe he saw him from a far way off because he was looking so that he could outrun the elders of the city. So before the elders could put shame on that kid, the dad is outrunning the shame, outrunning the elders, which just deepens the father's love for the kid and really marked me this year. It is one of those lessons that has shifted the way I view God. My practice of even confession, because shame is no longer dripping off confession because there's an understanding, a depth of his love for me. So anyway, that is probably my big heart transformation story from 2023 that I'm really grateful for.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that, Christy.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Really beautiful.
Personal update. Thinking update. Yeah. I don't know.
So wait, Christy, can I share something here?
Yeah.
So I've been fascinated by the way that shame functions in the Gospels. And I think that through the work of Brené Brown and others, like, the conversation about shame has become popularized, right?
Yeah.
In our pop culture and the nomenclature, like, we're able to converse more thoughtfully and accurately about shame and the work it does, and especially the phenomenon of internalized shame.
Yeah.
I think, right? So as I think about that story, I think about how the father runs to the younger son And your observation then helps us understand why the long way off comment is important, mm-hmm. not just from the standpoint of the father, you know, watching for the son, but the father getting to the son before the shame of the community gets to the son.
Yes.
Which would then be why the robe and the ring and the shoes are important.
Right.
Right? Because if the son reenters the city with all these markers of being a son, then the father has covered the shame.
That's right.
But, or and, so it's not a but, because I feel like the fullness of that needs to stand. And the story itself is told, Luke tells us, because religious leaders and Pharisees were grumbling that Jesus ate and drank with sinners. Mm-hmm. And the story ends with the older brother upset that he'd never had a party, and the father going out to the older brother and saying, you can get glad in the same pants you got mad in, or toga, right? Like you don't have to stand out here and grumble. So the story was told to help the people angry at Jesus understand they didn't have to be angry and they were invited to the party too. Mm-hmm. In other words, it was told to shame them. So I am fascinated right now with how shame works in the scriptures.
Yeah.
Who gets protected and shielded from shame? Mm-hmm. And who, because it's not good for them, and who is shameless that need to feel shame because it's the first step towards repentance.
Yeah.
I think the even that using that word shameless like is an interesting. It's an interesting illumination of that whole premise, right? That like we do say that certain people are shameless, and it's not a good thing to be shameless.
Yeah.
Even though we also say that shame is not a good thing, so it's like okay, well, there's some form of this that we realize if you don't have it, you tend to miss. You know, you tend to misbehave, you tend to abuse people, you tend to misuse people if you're shameless. And so there's some form of shame, I think, even in our nomenclature, there's some form of it that we recognize is a helpful thing that says like, oh, I don't want to lose my standing with these people by behaving in a shameless way, by behaving in a way that sort of brings shame upon me. So.
I would push back probably because all the work I've done, even in emotions of just, you know, the difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is like, I did something wrong. Shame is that, you know, guilt is like, I did a bad thing. Shame is I am a bad person. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe, and I could be wrong in this, but I think maybe Jesus in this story is trying to point out the bad thing that the Pharisees are doing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would say that he's trying to shame them. I think I would say he's trying to point out their guilt, that they have done something wrong and that they need to repent of that.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that shame in and of itself does good. Mm. I think guilt does good.
You're not alone in that, Christy.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I think, are with you on that. And the reason why I'm not fully on board with that is because I think we're dealing with an issue of translation here. Mm. The definition you gave of guilt and shame, I think Brené Brown talks about that. In the Christian world, right. Tim Keller talks about that.
Yep.
So it's well established, and I think there's a fair amount of agreement around it. The issue is, I think, that shame works differently and is experienced differently in an honor-shame culture.
That's right.
And so the shame... And so it's not as, so a lot of people have written about how Paul and doesn't have the same psychological experiences internally that modern, wealthy, educated, industrial, democratic people do. Like we constitute identity differently. We experience shame differently.
Yeah.
And so I want to hold space for two things to be true. The internalized toxic shame you're talking about, I don't think does good work for people long-term. Like it's an awful way to live, and I'm not affirming that.
Yeah.
And there is some kind of honor shame still happening in our world today where shame keeps us from wrong.
Yeah.
Or communal shame helps us understand wrong or see wrong we couldn't perceive otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for instance, last night I went to a cigar bar to hang out with people from our church. Yes, priests were hanging out with their congregants at a cigar bar. We were talking and having a cigar. And it was fun. It was a great time. And there were a couple times when I had a joke come to mind. Listener, go with me. I know this is hard to imagine. I had a joke come to mind, and I knew if I said it, it would be borderline appropriate. Another way to say that is it would be borderline inappropriate.
Right. Yeah. Right on the border of appropriate and inappropriate. Yeah.
And it was not like, if I do this, it'll be wrong. That kept me from saying the joke. It was more, if I do this, I will incur the, I will harm the community and incur sort of their opposition to me, which is a different force acting upon me. Now, I would maybe tell that joke to Ben in privacy, right? That I wouldn't, and I will later, Ben, don't you worry. but I wouldn't do it in that setting because of the amount of people there, because of the power that I have as a pastor, because yeah. I can't, there's a lot of ways to misunderstand that. Yeah. Now, I think there's some aspect of me not wanting, A, to hurt people, but B, incur social shame that kept me from telling that joke.
Yeah.
And ultimately, those work in that setting unto caring for the community.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a different force. It's a different, I don't know if you call it a feeling, but it's a different impulse than the impulse that might spring up. Like if you had like the toxic shame that we talked about before, maybe in addition to refraining from telling the joke, you also heap condemnation on yourself internally, right? And it's like, why do I keep coming up with these terrible jokes? What kind of a person am I? That would be the toxic shame that I think all of us are saying, that's no way to live. But I think that's different than the kind of thing that you're talking about, Matt, where it's like, there's also a shame that's like, oh, for me to say that, yeah, that would not be helpful for these people, even though it might not necessarily be wrong for me to say this in every context.
Like,
but this context makes it wrong. Yeah, like a social shame that may, you know, perhaps helps us to, you know, helps us to love one another, actually, right?
Right.
You know, that's a fascinating. That's anyway, maybe we should talk more about that in the new year.
I know, seriously.
Yeah, let us know, listener, if that was if that provokes Kairos is for you, or if you want to hear more about that, because I'm fascinated by. I'll just say this: I think you know, one of our axioms is God's love always reckons with power, and what I see happening is Jesus shielding shame heaped on the powerless, mm-hmm. and allowing shame to be experienced by the powerful.
Yes.
Another way to say this is, usually in the Gospels, the wrongdoer is the person who has more status, power, and honor. Mm-hmm. And the wronged is the person with less status, power, and honor. Mm-hmm. And Jesus works overtime to shield the one being wronged from their shame and works overtime to expose, reveal, and let the person doing something shameful experience that's a shameful act you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're harming the community. You're harming somebody. You know.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Which is different than what Brené Brown is talking about.
Right, for sure.
Which is hard to keep in mind. Thank you for sharing that, Christy.
Yeah.
I don't know, Ben, do you want to, I mean, Ben's moved houses. We already mentioned that. You want to share more, Ben, personally?
Yeah. I mean, and this relates to also, it feels like there's a tectonic shift perhaps happening in a lot of areas of my life. And that I share a lot of those shifts with you, Matt, not the house move. we moved, I mean, if your listeners aren't aware, just moved about, is it 12 miles? 12 miles south of where I used to live. I used to live pretty close to Matt in the suburbs of Indianapolis, but now I live in closer to the heart of the city of Indianapolis. And yeah, it's a different life down here, and we're really loving it. Moved into a 111-year-old house, and creaky floorboards, can't sneak around anymore. So anyway, we're really loving the house, quirks and all. But also, we're recording this, we're like just out of the weekend of being received into the Episcopal Church, which has been the culmination of a really long journey of discernment for our church and for just ourselves personally. And so our ordinations were received. And so that was kind of a personal journey of discernment. But then our church became an Episcopal church yesterday as we're recording this.
Yay.
And that was it was the culmination of a very long journey, the beginning of another one that we're really excited about. And it made a lot of sense for us. And maybe we can, chat about that, about why it made sense for our church and for us. But I think it's part of a larger shift for me, just in terms of, I have been, I think, fascinated with, enchanted by the Book of Common Prayer for over 20 years. Mm. Back when I was like a worship pastor at a charismatic church, I somehow got a hold of the Book of Common Prayer, which is the Episcopal prayer book.
If you're missing ABCP, I may have found the culprit. Yeah. Well, you said you got your hands on it, but you didn't say how.
Oh, I got my hands. Yeah, yeah. If you're missing it, if you're missing your Book of Common Prayer, I may have taken it. Yeah, I may have stolen it. I'm sorry.
Dad joke in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. You never know. You never know when they're going to happen. But yeah, I got my hands on it, and yeah, I just felt immediately enchanted by it. And so, in a lot of ways, I think I have been attracted to, Anglican theology, spirituality, for a long time, which I mean, as embodied in the Episcopal Church. The Episcopal Church is part of the Anglican Communion, and it's an Anglican church in the sense that it has its traces its ancestry back to the Church of England and Christianity on the British Isles in general. But anyway, I don't know. It feels like for me personally, it feels like the culmination of a really long journey where it's like, this has felt like home for a really long time in terms of just how I think about my faith, how I experience my faith, how I read the Bible. It feels good to sort of be like my ordination is here. My church is here. I'm pastoring a church that's part of this group of churches that really, I think, embody how I live out my faith, it just feels fitting to me. There's a lot that I appreciate about how the Episcopal Church embodies, the historic Christian faith that, makes a lot of sense for me. So,
yeah. And just my gloss on that is I affirm everything Ben said, except I did not steal a BCP, but I do feel like, we've talked a lot on this podcast. I think this podcast has more often than not been our public conversation working out what to make of all of the earthquakes and eruptions that we've experienced in the Christian community in the last 8 years. I think we talked about it a lot, sort of the Black Lives Matter, Me Too, Church Too, election of Donald Trump, the pandemic, the summer of 2020, which was, sort of a concentration of all the Black Lives Matter stuff. And then the rise of Christian nationalism. Like all these things have, I think, impacted all of us. Mm-hmm. But one of the ways it's impacted me is that it was one of the primary sort of catalysts for the move into the Episcopal Church for me. I think I experienced this maybe in a way Ben didn't, but Ben, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I felt increasingly unwelcomed in our previous association. And it just wasn't a good fit anymore. talking about things like church abuse and white supremacy and misogyny. Like, it was grinding against the gears of the institutional apparatus and wasn't appreciated, and in some ways seen as a transgression or a violation of unstated, unspoken norms. So all that to say, the move into the Episcopal Church for me has been like, they actually want me there, which is really nice, because it's felt like a long time that I've just been kicking against the goads. You know, I've been in places that feel like I'm pushing a rock up a hill, or I'm sort of an outlier here. And I'm not necessarily an outlier in some ways, but embraced rather than pushed away or ostracized, which is just incredible. It's great to feel like that. We all want to be loved, you know?
It's true. It's a real basic
need.
We all
want to be loved and wanted. Like, we want to be wanted. Yeah. And I think I'm in a place now where I really believe I'm wanted. Yeah. And we had our bishop come and receive our church yesterday, sort of officially, and do confirmations and receptions at our church. And everybody was just so glad.
Yeah.
And was blessed by her presence. And she carries herself with a gentle authority and a kind strength that it's just so beautiful. So much like Jesus, I think. And so I think relieved, there's like an exhale, like an existential exhale kind of for me. Mm-hmm. And grateful. Like, I'm really grateful that we've landed here. At the same time, I'm really aware, not only in our Gravity Commons community, just we were chatting about this last week, where people are with churches. And I know a number of listeners, and that I know that your relationship with your local church or the denomination you grew up in is complicated, you know? And I just want to say that I feel that. And so hear me just about my story, not as a thumb against my nose, wiggling my fingers, but more as like a... is cathartic, and it's cathartic because of how, you know, unfinished and painful it was before that.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, it's maybe worth saying that, you know, it's not like, hey, we finally found, you know, the perfect church, the perfect denomination. I mean, there's plenty of, you know, there's plenty of trouble to go around everywhere you go. So it's not that either. It just feels like a good fit for us and for our church. And there's a lot of factors that went into that, that, you know, the local diocese, there's a huge variety, you know, in the Episcopal Church of kind of ways of thinking about faith. And that's one of the things I actually appreciate about it, is just that there's a, by and large, tolerance for, you know, a variety of ways of thinking about these things. But yeah, there was just a real, we were fortunate in one sense, because the values of our local church were really well aligned with the values of this particular Episcopal diocese. And that's, you know, it's not the same everywhere. And so for us, it felt like the right move. And it has continued to feel like that. So anyway, even though, I mean, I will say too, it has been, initially it felt a little disorienting to me, because I grew up in the kind of the charismatic church, the evangelical church. It was a big part of my identity. And, you know, we thought certain things about mainline denominations, right? They were, you know, apostate. They really didn't believe in Jesus. They really didn't believe in the Bible. Like, all these things that you just sort of took for granted growing up. And it's like, oh, I'm actually joining officially, like, I'm making vows, like, especially as a clergy person, like, it's actually quite serious, the vows you take to, you know, like, into the Episcopal Church. And so so it was disorienting for me from an identity standpoint. You know, I had a lot of those misunderstandings corrected, you know, like, I've seen people just with, man, they love Jesus here. They have a warm faith. They, you know, take the Bible very seriously, Orthodox Christian belief very seriously. So I was pleased to see all of that, but it still felt increasingly less, but initially it felt quite disorienting to be like, oh, I'm an Episcopal priest. Like I am just in a mainline denomination. And that, it just felt a little weird to me. So for a little while.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. But it's good. It feels like there's a reprieve to the tumult.
Yeah. I think that's right. There's just like this, I feel like there's this wide open field now to be like, okay, live out your faith, lead your church. Let's see what God's doing. You know, mm-hmm. That's what it feels like to me. This coming year, I'm excited about it. So
I'm really thankful. I mean, obviously I've watched and been with you guys as you've journeyed through this whole process. Mm-hmm. And just as a friend, there's something so delightful to kind of see, you know, what was happening internally for you than to be able to kind of be expressed externally in a setting that is more, that is a good fit for you. Yeah. And that's what I want for people that I love, right? Right. It's almost like, oh my gosh, this is so good. And I'm just thankful that that's where you are.
Yeah. Mm. Thanks, Christy.
Well, thanks, Christy.
Yeah.
Receive that as love from you.
Yeah.
So good. It's been a big year.
Yeah, it has been. It has been a big year. Feels like a turning of a new page or new chapter, maybe a new volume. I don't know. We'll see where it all goes. Hey,
maybe I can, I feel, we should end the podcast here. Maybe I can, instead of a dad joke, maybe I can just give a benediction.
Well, before you do that, I did read just an article about how much Santa paid for a sleigh.
How much did he pay?
Yeah.
I didn't realize
nothing. It was on the house.
There it is.
But
before you do that, that's great.
Before you do the serious benediction,
yeah,
I love that.
That's great. Way to juke Matt's attempt to sort of like dial back the silliness.
Yeah, I know.
And like,
I know.
And then do a benediction. You're just like, nope.
Just go full
silliness inserted.
Okay, but my hands now are open, palms up. I want to receive the benediction.
Yeah, let's receive the benediction.
Yes, all right, please.
Well, it's taking every ounce of sanctification in me not to do a troll benediction with a dad joke. I just want you to know, everybody, how holy this moment really is.
But you did want to know that was what you wanted to do, though. Yeah. So that's kind of half telling the joke.
No, so you don't know the joke.
All right, let's.
It's half telling the joke, but it's fully declaring your righteousness before men. Receive the benediction.
Here we go. Hands up.
Christy and Ben, listener, may we revel and delight in the hope of Christmas, the incarnation. May it change the way we see. May it infiltrate our bodies, ourselves, our minds, so that the hope of the world, the light of light, Jesus Christ, becomes not only the Savior of the world, but the very ground of your being this Christmas. May his light shine from within you. May the light coming from your eyes be good so that you can see new creation, even in the midst of impenetrable darkness, darkness that seems like it will never get better. Wherever you need hope, may you have hope. Wherever you need faith, may you have faith. And wherever you want love, may you, even now, be held firmly. May love be the ballast that holds your life together. May you go from this podcast full of faith, hope, and love. In Jesus' name, amen.
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 Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful or enjoyable, we'd love it if you'd tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And you can join our Gravity community online for free at gravityleadership.com/join.
You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as our email most Fridays with curated links to articles we find interesting and helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the show. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Recording button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.